Welcome to Wise and Nice, a true crime podcast with your hosts
Danny Armstrong
and Kelly Lee.
Please remember that we mean no disrespect to anyone mentioned in this episode or across any of the Wise and Nice platforms. We have an interest in true crime and related topics, and whilst we may offer our own personal views on certain items, it is meant to be educational and as light-hearted as possible. The information we present is collated from research gathered from the internet, and we reference and credit our sources wherever possible.
If you've liked what you've heard and want to join in with us, follow us on our socials, Instagram, Wives and Knives the Pod, Twitter, at Knives Wives, and Facebook, Wives and Knives Pod. We also have a little website where we post photographs and other information about the cases that we research. And this is wivesandknives.wixsite.com/my site. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Wives and Knives.
Yes, hello everybody.
Hope you're all doing well out there. Kelly, do you want a little catch up? How are you?
Yeah, super quick. I'm pretty tired because I was up late playing poker. How cool does that sound?
Yeah,
I had several ciders also, so yeah.
That's a lot.
Quite rock and roll for me of a weekend, to be fair. Yeah, apart from that, all good, really. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm physically knackered right now because I've got proper into going to the gym over the past few months, and I've quite shocked myself with how much I enjoy it. But I did a big like arm session yesterday, and then I went back today, did some more exercises, and then did it's called upper body blast class. And now whatever muscle is in your armpit is twitching. So I'm just sat here like twitching slightly to myself.
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't see that.
I know. But no, I'm
twitchy arm.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what it's called, but like you get like little muscle spasms when you've really overworked something. But it seems to be my armpit muscles that are really feeling it today. But no, yeah, so I'm just gonna crack on with the episode really.
Okay.
This week I wanted to focus on a case of some missing people that have recently been in the news, and that is Constance Martin and Mark Gordon. And I'm always drawn towards cases of missing people because I think it's so sort of painfully sad and really interesting. And especially with technology now and the amount of CCTV available and everything being traced, going missing is getting harder and harder and harder. So then when people do, it's all the more fascinating in a way, but also like truly heartbreaking. I think I've had this obsession with missing people and hoping they're found and wanting updates and stuff since I've been quite little, with shows like Crime Watch. But also, do you remember a series called Lorraine Kelly's Missing Mums?
Yeah, it rings the bell.
I wasn't particularly young. I'd maybe in my teens or early 20s or something, but it used to be on telly and I'd watch it and it would really like upset me. Yeah. Like, I'm not particularly a crier at like documentaries or anything like that, but it would really get to me. And in all different cases, sometimes it would be a missing person and something awful's happened to them accidentally. It can be mental health problems. It can be a crime has taken place. It can sometimes just be someone wants to go missing. And in every way, there was never a winner in the situation. Everybody was fucking heartbroken. And it just made me so sad. And that kind of, I don't know, interest in how missing people's cases are investigated has definitely stuck with me. And I think that actually might be evident in the cases that I suggest to you. I think I'm more likely to suggest unsolved missing people, and you're more likely to suggest like solved cases with a lot of like intricate trials and stuff like that. I think you tend to suggest more cases like that. I don't know if you think that's true.
Yeah, I would agree with that, sure. Mm.
So, just to kind of set the scene, I did a little bit of browsing on missingpeople.co.uk, which sounds awful, but I did. And just to get some statistics to share with everyone. So someone is reported missing every 90 seconds in the UK. Isn't that crazy?
It is, yeah. It's
absolutely crazy. And obviously, like, the majority of these people are found very shortly afterwards. But one person every 90 seconds just in the UK. Think about, like, Europe. Think about the world. Think, do you know, like, people are going missing all the time. So that's about 170,000 people that are reported missing every year. And of these, about 98,000 are adults and the rest of them are children. So today we're sort of focusing on, it's like adults that have gone missing. So had a bit more of a look into adults going missing. And there's five main reasons why people who have gone missing and have been found report that they went missing, or like their family do. So it's the top thing, like, reason why people go missing is things related to diagnosed or undiagnosed mental health issues, and this in some way impacts 8 out of every 10 adults going missing. So it might not be the sole reason, but mental health is definitely a key factor in a lot of missing cases. We've got a relationship breakdown, and that is 3 in 10 missing adults. But then the next one I thought was quite surprising, dementia, which it was surprising, but then when you think about it, it isn't. That in itself... like really upsets me.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people as well. And then we've got financial problems, and 1 in 50 adults that go missing say that this is the principal reason for them to go missing. And then we've got the one that I sort of think tends to lead to crime the most, which is escaping violence, and that can be of a relationship, in a family, or like gang related as well. So yeah, I think it's interesting to get the facts from a proper source. I also looked on the Missing People's Unit website, which is like run in conjunction with or by the police. That's a really interesting website if you want to look at like geographical statistics with people going missing and where people are more likely to go missing from, and where, if they're found, where they're most likely to be found, and it's often very close to their home, just things like that. There's a lot of information out there if this is a topic that interests you. But the case I'm going to talk about today, I first heard about it, and it was first reported in the newspaper on the 6th of January 2023. And it said, the M61 closed throughout the night after a fire broke just after 6 p.m. on the 5th of the 1st, 2023. Officers closed the carriageway near and have said that there is concern for welfare for the driver/drivers who did not remain at the scene, searching the surrounding areas to try and find the driver/driver's passenger, and the M61 has now been fully reopened. So I think a lot of people have gathered kind of where myself and and you live geographically, but we're very close to Bolton and the M61. And I know that this caused a lot of traffic in my area. So did you hear about it at the time?
Yeah, same as you. I think I heard it on the local radio, maybe.
Yeah, because at first it was just like, there's a car on fire. And then I noticed all the traffic. And then I think it was the day after they started speaking about the people that had fled from the scene, so to speak. So it was cordoned off, and like we said, it did create a lot of, what's it called? There was a huge impact on the road system in the area. I'm sure there's a more concise word for that, but you know what I mean. And yeah, over sort of the next 24 hours, the concern for the welfare of the people who were in the car sort of came out as the big story, and officers were deployed to search the surrounding area, but couldn't find them at all. So it was soon reported that there was like two people seen fleeing the car, and they were quickly identified as Constance Martin and Mark Gordon, and they have managed to evade authorities ever since. So we're talking it'll nearly be a month since this happened. I think when the episode comes out, it will have been a month.
Yeah.
What makes this case so interesting is who they are and the history of them, and the fact authorities believe that Constance gave birth likely in the back of the car, and that they are now on the run with a newborn baby who's not received any medical attention. And it's that in itself that makes this particularly unusual, that and the fact that these two people are not ordinary people. Dubbed by the press as an aristocrat, Constance Martin has had what some people would call a privileged yet troubling and peculiar upbringing. And Mark Gordon, her boyfriend since 2016, is a convicted rapist who has spent 20 years in a US prison. So I'm going to go into a little more detail about who these people are. So Constance, also known as Toots, comes from the aristocratic Martin family, who have long been subject of national intrigue and speculation. So her grandmother was Mary Ann Martin, and she was at the centre of a huge political scandal in 1954. I wish I could tell you more detail about that scandal, but this is I told Kelly before we started recording, when I was researching this episode, I went down this little rabbit hole, and it was of that political scandal, but I didn't understand it. I just didn't. I'm sure that if I had set more time aside, I could have decoded it. I'm quite a bright lady, but I was just like... My knowledge isn't enough to say there was a political scandal. So infamous, some would say. And Mary Ann Martin, was also the goddaughter of the Queen Mother.
Oh.
I know. So the family had this huge estate, which includes a Grade 1 listed mansion, 4 villages and a cricket club.
Wow.
So we're talking real money here.
Yeah.
And it was actually put up for sale, their estate, by the family in 2010, and bought by an American buyer. There we go. So Napier Martin is Constance's father, and he made headlines in 2013 after renouncing his $115 million inheritance and giving up their estate in Dorset, after being told by a voice that he should be doing other things with his life. And this was reported on quite heavily by the Times newspaper at the time. Although the Times newspaper is now hidden behind a paywall, so I can't get you direct quotes. I could only read about a quarter of it, and they wanted some money off me, and I don't have that kind of money, I'm afraid. So basically they reported on it, but the upshot that I get from the little bit I was allowed to read is that he left sort of the life he was used to live a life of whale watching, spiritual discovery and tree surgery, swapping his grand estate for living in a lorry. And he revealed that whenever, this is like a quote from him, he says, when everything in my life materially, everything in my life was material and I was a complete empty shell. So that's her dad. And she had two younger brothers as well. So Maximilian, he's now 34, and Tobias, who's 31. And they were brought up with Constance in this beautiful 5,000 acre Dorset parkland. And this mansion that they were brought up in was actually used in the 1996 adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma, which is the one that has Ewan McGregor and Gwyneth Paltrow in it. So if you can imagine, like, the opulence we're talking about. They attended St. Mary's Shaftesbury, which is an independent Roman Catholic school. Sorry, it's a girls' school, so she must have just attended this, not her brothers. But it's super posh. Like, so the daughter of Andrew Parker Bowles and the Queen Consort went there. Novelist Sophie Kinsella, Martha Fiennes, who is the sister of Ralph Fiennes. And by the time this school closed in 2020, it charged like boarders at the school £30,000 a year to attend. So, I know. When she was nine, Constance's father had the awakening that I talked about previously. And he left to go and live in his lorry. And when he returned to the UK, he didn't want sort of any of the wealth or anything. He gave it all to Maximilian, her brother. Max went on to sell everything. And he sold it to the American like hedge fund billionaire person. And he was initially offered $98 million, so crazy. And it's I read in a few places, but like sketchy places, that the king was interested in buying it as an estate for the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. So I don't know whether that's quite true. It was basically said in a few TikTok videos. I don't know if it's true.
Oh, but it's definitely true then.
You know, like, the really thorough research. But I just thought it was an interesting fact. So she was growing up in what you might think sounds absolutely like privileged and idyllic, but she goes on to describe growing up on that estate as full of naked picnics, siestas amid hay bales and tractor scoops. I don't know what a tractor scoop is, but I do know what a naked picnic is, and I don't think it's something you want in your family home. I'm getting a removed from the real world kind of vibes.
Yeah, sure.
But so Constance, or Toots as she was known to friends and family, studied Arabic and Middle Eastern studies at the University of Leeds. As a student, she was actually featured in Tatler, the magazine that was, as the babe of the month. And she described cider as one of her five a day, and how she wanted to get a tattoo of a tortoise on her foot. She was a bit of a party girl, attended like big, fancy, glittering parties with the kind of people that had similar wealth to her family. And she spent a lot of time on ski holidays in really upmarket resorts. But she wasn't just sort of a it girl. She spent a lot of time studying with her university course. And she lived in downtown Cairo as part of her course for a while during 2011. And she did really well at uni. So she graduated with a 2.1 in 2012. So just gives you a bit of an idea of of who she was and what she was about, because when she left university, she then went on to be a researcher for the London office of Al Jazeera, which is Qatar-owned English language news channel. And this job, according to her LinkedIn profile, lasted 11 months. And then she worked as a project manager at a theatre and a freelance photographer. And she obviously had some talent at this because she won some awards for it. And then she ended up working at the Daily Mail as a journalist for a bit. So sort of a bit of career hopping, but she seemed to be pretty good at everything she did.
Yeah, so she sounds like a very well-educated, switched-on person.
Oh, 100%, yeah. And seems like she's had such a strange, for want of a better word, upbringing. Huge amounts of wealth, but also some very sort of weird experiences. And she's clever and funny. A lot of her friends speak about how like lovely she was and stuff like that. So yeah, I just wanted to give you a bit of a more well-rounded view of her than you get from sort of one news report.
Yeah.
But she actually, after working at the Daily Mail, she enrolled on an acting course at East 15 Drama School in Essex. And one of her classmates is someone who's spoken to quite a lot of papers, not in like a shitty way. She just one of the only quotes that I could find about her as a person, but it was, she's just beautiful, full of life, full of kindness, and she was very, very talented. So definitely well thought of as an actress by her contemporaries. So she was doing this drama course, but she actually dropped out in 2016. And it was around that time that people say she changed, because she was in an erratic relationship with a man that none of her course mates had ever met. And who was that man, I hear you ask? Well, that man was Mark Gordon. Now, Mark Gordon is 13 years her senior, and he was born in Birmingham, moving in with his mother and half-siblings to Florida when he was young. In 1990, when he was 15, some news reports say 14 as well, but most say 15, so I'm going with 15, but it could have been 14, or it could have been 14 when it was committed and 15 when he was arrested, I don't know. But he was found guilty of kidnap and sexual battery and spent 20 years in jail. And it was recorded that he was deported in 2010. The US courts describe how he had like broken into a woman's home through her bathroom window before like tying her up with a pair of stockings, and I think he used the stockings to cover his face. So I think that's terrifying. And then I don't know if he tied her up with them as well. Yeah, like, and then he ties her up and like abused her, raped her. He's an absolute piece of shit. So he's a registered sex offender, and his records have actually been made public. You can give them a Google if you want. It's the Florida Department of Law Enforcement's website. I could only find a little bit about sort of more of his upbringing, but his mother, Sylvia, said this to the Daily Mail. Again, Daily Mail, not the height of great journalism, but it's the only quote I could find regarding him. She said, "I'm very concerned about my son. I love my son. He's a good boy, so I don't know what this is all about. I'm worried for all of them, and I'm thinking, I wonder if someone's kidnapped them." Which, if you know anything about this case, you'll know it's probably not true. But there we go. So it's actually quite unclear how Constance and Mark met, but just, you know, using common sense, I'd assume the internet. I don't know. It was soon after that they moved into a small terrace house in Ilford, London. And the couple were described by neighbours at the time as, like, mega mysterious. And at this time, Constance, like, completely cut off from her family. Her brother got married, Maximilian, to a jewellery designer called Ruther Meyer, I think, in 2021. And there was this big photo shoot and she wasn't included in it. Around that time, she stopped posting things on social media and kind of really withdrew from everything that was, like, usual for her. So she definitely had, like, a huge change in personality. And then they got evicted in August of last year and left the house with smoke damage and a partially collapsed ceiling. And this damage was, like, thousands of pounds. And this kind of started people looking for them, but obviously there wasn't as much heat looking for them as there is now. So now we've got 200 officers looking for them since the car fire. I know. But they're moving around, like, furtively, hiding from cameras, paying in cash. And she had obviously, like, stockpiled a lot of cash. It's believed that they're booking hotels under pseudonyms and they have used Airbnb as well. It's thought that they were taking a trip to a port in hope of booking a ferry, but they haven't done this, and police are sure that they are still in the UK at this moment. There is nothing to suggest that any of them have come to light any harm, but because the police now know that they've got this newborn baby with them, they need to make sure that the child essentially doesn't require medical assistance. And I believe that they're probably wanted for, like, the damages to property and stuff like that as well. But the main concern is for this baby. So I've just got a little bit of a timeline of where this odd couple have been, and then we'll discuss a little bit about the things that I've told you. So the police investigation launched, like, very sort of seriously, like, the 200 officers after the car was set on fire. It's believed that they travelled to Liverpool, then onwards to Essex via a taxi. Oh my God, I can't afford a taxi to, like, the nearest town. Like, that's a huge amount of money to get Liverpool to Essex.
Oh my God, could you imagine how much that would cost?
I know! That shouldn't be the thing blowing me away with this, but it really is. And they were seen by members of the public in Essex, in this place called Harwich on the 6th of January. Then there was some sightings of the family in Colchester as well. The couple were then seen at East Ham Station Newham in East London on the 7th of January. So they're really getting about for people who are essentially, like, now on the run. They're showing up in all different places, but then they'll, like, move on really quickly. The pair were seen leaving a taxi with an orange carrier bag, and by this time they had a pram with them as well. They both had their heads and faces covered, and Mark was wearing plastic bags on his shoes that he removed some time later. After that, police said that they went into Argos on Whitechapel Road, East London, and they bought camping gear. And this is concerning because there's a newborn baby involved. They bought a two-person, like, blue tent, and they were walking around the area, like, Constance as well, for more than 3 hours trying to, like, flag down a black cab, but they kept refusing to take them. And I don't know why this is. Is it because they've got a pram? Is it because they look shifty? I don't know.
I feel like some taxi drivers, and I've read this in a couple of articles recently, have got issues with having prams in there. So maybe a combination of everything.
And a baby, like, is the baby supposed to be in a baby seat so the taxi can take it?
Yeah, legally a baby should be in a baby seat.
Yeah. So they were last seen walking along Brick Lane towards Bethnal Green at 10:01 that night. They have since, it's believed that they've dumped the pushchair and that they've managed to get a taxi to Haringey I'm not sure where that is, to be honest. Then they've been seen in East Sussex and around the port that's there, but the police are adamant that they've not left the UK. There was actually an audio appeal made through the Independent newspaper. It's been broadcast on TV as well, from Napier Martin, Constance's dad, the one that had the spiritual awakening. And he says, "Darling Constance, even though we've remained estranged at the moment, I stand by, as I always have done, and as the family always have done, to do whatever is necessary for your safe return to us. I beseech you to find a way to turn yourself and your wee one into the police as soon as possible, so you and he or she can be protected." He has spoken out, and we know that her and her family don't have the best relationship, but let everyone just wants to know that she's okay and that the baby is okay. And this is where the police have really been sort of speaking on behalf of Constance's family as well. And they've just got a few sort of quotes from police officers that are investigating the case. "So finding the baby is our top priority, and we're now offering a £10,000 reward to anyone who provides information which leads them to being found. Maybe you've been reluctant to come forward for whatever reason with key information to help us find the family. It does not matter why you didn't speak to us earlier. What matters is doing the right thing for the good of a vulnerable newborn baby." And then the police went on to say, "We have no evidence to suggest that they have boarded a ferry at New Haven, and we strongly believe they remain here in the UK, although they really could be anywhere. Our inquiries also established that the baby was alive when they got the taxi to New Haven." So the baby was definitely alive on the 8th of January. "We know they are still in possession of camping equipment, so encourage people to remain vigilant and look out for a blue tent. Please keep your eyes peeled when you are out there in waste ground or beauty spots or whilst walking your dog, and report any information to us." And then this is quite sort of like poignant, I thought, because one of Greater Manchester Police's head of public protection, she's called Michaela Kerr, and she spoke sort of appealing to Constance as a mum. And she says, "As a mum, I would feel like I would like to make a direct appeal to you, Constance. Constance, I know that this is an exceptionally hard time for you and you are feeling scared, but I promise that our number one priority is the same as yours, to keep your beautiful newborn safe. As you know, it's really important that both you and your baby are assessed by medical professionals as soon as possible. So please make contact with emergency services or make your way to the nearest hospital, wherever you may be. I would also like to appeal to members of the public, not just in Bolton and Greater Manchester, but beyond." So I thought that was really sort of poignant and a good way to sort of end this case as well, because they are still out there, and it's everyone's sort of objective is just to make sure that everyone is safe, because to me it strikes me as a very unsafe situation for particularly Constance and the baby to be in.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Like Mark Gordon, obviously, he comes across as a scary piece of shit. But he has done his time for his crime, and there is no evidence that he is doing anything horrible to them now. There's no proof. But to me, it feels a lot of... it feels very coercive, control-y to me.
Yeah, I think what are we achieving from... I appreciate the reasons why you might be on the run, but what are you actually achieving? You've ultimately got to think about that baby, you know, so be a good father and at least let Constance take the baby to a local hospital to be checked out.
Yeah. I honestly, there were so many sightings of them in the first couple of days. I was expecting it to all be wrapped up by now, and it's gone so quiet and it's been so long, and they could be anywhere. We've obviously, they've proven that they are mobile, getting from the north to the south, and they could have come back up here. So I really just think people need to not forget and be aware and keep an eye out.
Absolutely.
Such a bizarre case, and I wonder what happened.
Yeah.
You know, in the lead up to this, and was it just one of those things that when a situation starts sort of like it's rolling and picks up momentum, and now either just Constance or both of them can't see a way out of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you just heard that little doo-doo going off, that's actually my little news app on my iPad telling me about another case that I think we were just going to mention at the end of this episode, because it's been absolutely like flooding the media, and that's the case of Nicola Bulley. So Nick is from a place called Inskip and went missing Friday.
Yeah.
What date was it? Do you know off the top of your head?
Oh, off the top of my head, no, I really don't. Yeah, 27th January would it be?
That spells, yeah. So she went missing on the 27th of January whilst walking her dog in St. Michael's, which is a little village that runs alongside the River Wyre. And she was walking a dog. She was seen by a few people. The police have managed to narrow down the sort of window of time in which she must have gone missing to 10 minutes. And we still don't know what happened. The police are saying that they believe that she has fallen into the river. So some fucking absolutely horrific accident has happened, but there is no trace of her. And it has really captured the media's interest, so to speak. But what just popped up on my iPad was that there's just been some footage of her released leaving her home that morning. So I think that'll give people a bit more of a visual as to what she was wearing. As far as sort of I'm concerned, and Kelly, I think you agree with me, like, it's a very live investigation at the moment, and there's a lot of conjecture going around, and really we just have to have faith that the police know what they're doing. And my heart completely goes out to her family. We've seen videos of them, like police have done, and particularly her dad broke my heart. So yeah, I mean, is there anything you'd like to add about the case, Kelly?
I think you said that really well. It's a live investigation. These are real people. Someone who's very, you know, beloved to them has gone missing. And I think even though we're probably guilty of it ourselves privately, you know, making assumptions, asking questions, because that's how our mind works. I've seen some really horrible things online in sort of true crime groups. And I think maybe people just need to calm the fuck down. And like we say, maybe just have trust in the police the time being, that they are doing absolutely everything, and just stop talking shit about people, because it would really hurt me if I saw someone talking about my family the way they're talking about certain characters from this case.
It makes me very aware of how I talk.
And
I don't want to be the bad side of true crime. I'll tell you what, it has also led to a lot of talk about, particularly in my office and with my friends, how much we put online about our whereabouts.
Because I had that conversation this morning.
One of the sort of early theories was obviously looking at the route that she walks. And Nicola had used Strava, which is something that a lot of people I know have used, and it shows your route. And obviously hindsight is a wonderful thing, and it's really sad that we live in a world where you shouldn't be making that information public, because you should be able to. But it's definitely made me think about things like that, and I think it's something we should all be very aware of.
Yeah, and I think that sort of information that's easily accessible by the public, combined with social media photos, which also back up sort of like visually where you are. You know, like if you're familiar with that area, you can look at photos and think, I know exactly where that person is at that exact time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does make you think, sure.
So, yeah, it's all really sad, to be honest. But, you know, it's the world we live in. You need to be aware of these things. And my thoughts are Nicola's family and anyone who's ever felt like going missing is the only option as well, and I hope that it isn't. Okay, so next week it's going to be a Kelly special.
It is. Mm-hmm. You'll be surprised, as Danny would be.
Yeah, Danny's always surprised.
Yeah.
She doesn't know what's going on.
No, she doesn't often. But she'll turn up, so, you know.
She does.
Until then, everybody, stay safe, look after yourselves, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.